The Athletic.
New Gareth Bale, new formation, first Premier League win against a team not in the relegation zone for 2 months, consecutive clean sheets for the first time in 2 months, biggest league win in 5 months. Was this the weekend that everything changed, or was it just Burnley at home? You're listening to the View from the Lane podcast. My name is Jack Pitbrook. I'm joined, as always, by James Moore. Now, James, it has been a pretty grim few months for Tottenham, but watching them batter Burnley in the bright sunlight yesterday afternoon, I did think, everything's changed. Everything's going to be okay, isn't it?
It's amazing, isn't it, how quickly, and we're going to kind of come on to the accusations that we've been quite fickle over the course of the season in a bit, I think. But it is like mad how quickly things do feel completely different. Which isn't to say I've come round to your way of thinking of sort of November, December that Spurs were in the title race. But certainly you kind of look at the Premier League table now all of a sudden and they're 6 points off fourth with a game in hand on West Ham. And you think, yeah, actually maybe it's not entirely insurmountable. And they're in the Europa League last 16 against a team who, you know, I'm sure we're very good because, you know, Dynamo Zagreb will always have a brilliant technically gifted players. That's kind of one of the things we know. But Spurs should be backing themselves to get through there. So if you look at it, you know, in the race for top four, potentially with a good opportunity to go through to the last eight of a European competition, it's not all bad, is it? I think I said to you last week, I think it was Tuesday when the sun came out for the first time, and I said to you, oh, it's so easy to feel optimistic about the world when the sun comes out. You know, you kind of that seasonal affective disorder thing. You know, you kind of realise you have that when the sun's come out, and it's like, oh wow, it's just so much nicer to go outside and it's sunny, and you can look forward, you can feel optimistic, and there are things to look forward to in the world after all. I don't know if that's too much of a kind of window into my state of well-being. Maybe, I don't know. But even more than that, on Wednesday night, seeing Dele Alli score an amazing goal and then smile for the first time in bloody ages, it's even better than the sun.
I'm not saying that the weather is why Tottenham were good, because that would be very silly, but it was a really, really nice day on Sunday. And like, I walked through, this will be of no interest to listeners at all, but I walked through Haringey beforehand on my way up to the ground, and it was so nice. And again, as always in these kind of situations, I did think, God, I really, really wish there were fans here, because it's exactly the kind of like Sunday lunchtime game where you get a nice big crowd and everyone's kind of relaxed, and I thought it would have been a really good vibe. So, and maybe that coloured my thinking, and maybe that's made me be more positive than I should have been about the game. But it was really good, and I did have that sense watching it that like things are starting to come together. And I'm sure a lot of that is to do with, you know, the changing of the seasons and the maybe even the sense that, you know, the worst of coronavirus might be behind us. And that we will have fans back into this ground. We will have a normal Euros. And I think the 2021-22 season, I think, will be a lot more normal than this one, even if it won't be a fully normal season. So maybe better things are around the corner. We'll get on to the whole Mourinho debate later on, because that is a debate that will never go away. But to look at a different individual, the person who most, I think, exemplified that change was Gareth Bale. To make the same point yet again, I wish that there had been fans there to see Bale play like this, because this is really what Daniel Levy brought him back for. You know, you've got the run past Charlie Taylor after about 5 or 6 minutes, so he just destroyed him down the right-hand side. That incredible, like, quarterback-style diagonal pass over Brownhill's head through to Kane to set up Kane's goal, which was great.
That's a long ball, according to
a long ball,
Smith.
Yeah.
Smith. Yeah, a long ball.
The clever little run in behind to score his first goal after 65 seconds from Sonny's pass from the left. And then best of all, I thought, was his goal, which was just a classic Bale goal. Like, he scored one a bit like that against Wolfsburg on Wednesday evening, when I think Dele was running in through the middle, passed out to the right-hand side. Bale took it first time, hit it far into the opposite corner. Whereas this one was slightly different in the sense that the ball came to him outside the box from Son's pass. Bale had to take one touch to set himself and then whipped it again round the defender into the far corner. But it was, you know, we had such a good view from the press box, James, and as soon as he took that first touch to set himself, you just knew what he was going to try, and you kind of knew that he'd do it because he did it on Wednesday, and he just seemed to radiate that confidence of being a top player again.
I think Mourinho said, didn't he, actually, and I can't remember if it was after the game on Wednesday or after the game on Sunday now, but he talked about the way he struck the ball, and I think it must have been after the game on Wednesday.
It was after Wednesday,
First time with such confidence. Like a player low on confidence probably wouldn't hit the ball like that. And that's a massively positive sign for Spurs, isn't it? If Gareth Bale is confident. And we've talked through the season about the necessity of Spurs finding a third goal scorer in this team, you know, and how much it's incredibly well documented how much they've relied on Son and Kane. And if Bale can come in, and we talked about needing to find someone who'd get 5, 6, 7, 8 Premier League goals in the season, and that looking incredibly unlikely. But now, actually, you look at it and think, well, Bale's on 3 now. And if he's in the team more often than not between now and the end, you kind of back him to get 6, 7, 8 goals, wouldn't you, I think?
Yeah, definitely. So Bale's got 3 in the league, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in all competitions. So, I think by the end of the season, his numbers will probably be okay. But he's playing like a better player than that. Like, he's playing like a player who would get, you know, could get 15-20 over the course of the season, I think, across all the competitions. And it's just amazing to see that change. I guess it probably, if you were to date it, James, would you go back to the West Ham game, that West Ham cameo, as being when he started to look a little bit more himself?
Well, no, I mean, I think you could go back to, I mean, we talked about the Manchester City game when he came on for the last, what, like kind of 15-20 minutes and was the only player in a Tottenham shirt that really did anything.
Oh, yeah, that's fair, yeah.
He went on that mazy run and then had the shot that Edison saved. But then the first leg of the Wolfsburg tie was after that, wasn't it? Before West Ham.
That's right.
So you'd probably go back through City, Wolfsburg, West Ham, Wolfsburg, Burnley over the course of the last like 2 weeks or whatever. I'd say, you know, he's kind of steadily progressed from being like a sort of impressive cameo, two good performances in Europe, a very good second half performance at West Ham, which obviously unfortunately wasn't enough. And then being probably, I don't know if he was Sky's man of the match, but he was one certainly among the better players in the pitch, probably was the man of the match, wasn't he? In a Premier League game against Burnley. You know, and that's a pretty rapid and steady progression and an entirely encouraging one. There's been quite a lot of sort of grumbling about it only being Burnley, which I kind of get. But if you look at their record, even just in the last couple of months, obviously they won at Anfield. I think the only games they've lost in the last sort of 6, 7 weeks have been against the sort of Chelsea and Man City. I don't mean they've lost to anyone else in the league. I mean, they've been in pretty decent form. They don't concede many goals, whoever's in the team. And I know, you know, they had Barnes and Wood mostly missing from their team. But still, it's offensively, you know, Tarkowski and Mir, in terms of like defence, and Pope as well in goal, like in terms of like defensive partnerships or units, among the best in the league, you'd say. To be able to, not many teams have scored 4 goals against Burnley this season. I wouldn't be surprised if it was the first time it happened.
One of Spurs' big structural issues this year has been putting away teams they should put away. So to see Spurs racking up, like, it's not stat padding for Spurs to rack up goals against Burnley. It's literally like the one thing they've struggled to do, as proven by those really annoying draws in games against Palace and Wolves and Fulham at home the other week. You know, Spurs have not been dominant and expansive in those games, so it's not silly to watch Spurs batter Burnley and then be like, this is good, this is much better, because that's exactly what they've been failing to do.
Forget, like, you know, what happened against Chelsea, what happened against Liverpool, what happened against West Ham. If Spurs had played like that or been able to play like that and won games, you know, the games that you mentioned against Palace, Wolves, Fulham, Brighton, if they had won even 2 of those games, they'd be like properly in the mix for the top 4. And it would, you know, I mean, if they'd won all of them, they'd be probably 3rd or whatever. So, yeah, you're right. It is a tangible step in the right direction, totally.
Right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You will enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/SpursPod to take advantage of this special 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/SpursPod. Just back on Bale, if I were to build a Gareth Bale backometer, a backometer, to say how back is he? Is he 100% back? Is he 90% back? Is he...
What are we saying back to what level? Are we talking about 12, 13?
Yeah, I guess it would... Like, yeah, when he left Spurs in 2013.
I mean, he's probably only at maybe sort of 60, 70 of that, maybe on the basis of what we saw on Sunday. And I don't think the expectation would be that he'd ever get back to 100% of that, maybe to 80. I mean, certainly like the Bale that we've seen in the last 2 weeks, it's probably been like what we expected to be seeing from sort of, I don't know, maybe November, maybe. So I guess we're kind of 3 or 4 months behind. But if we do get it more often than not between now and the end of the season, you would fancy it would give Spurs a chance. You know, I think like this time last week, we were kind of worried about the possibility of not qualifying for Europe at all. But actually now, you know, that just feels like it can make such a big difference. And not just in terms of what Bale is bringing to a team, but on what the rub off on the other players is going to be of that. And you can just see like, there's so much more positivity. And like, you know, I talked about Dele Alli smiling before, which sounds like nonsense, but like players enjoying playing, it's going to kind of make them more confident when they're out on the pitch. And it's kind of, you know, all those things kind of play into one another. And those little intangibles, I think, do make quite a big difference. And you can see them getting quite a lot of confidence in the way the last couple of games have gone. And to go through so convincingly in Europe without having to rely on Kane and as much on Son, I think is quite a big deal. You'd imagine they'll probably have to play a slightly stronger team against Zagreb, but I wouldn't be necessarily entirely surprised if Son or Kane do miss out. I suspect one of them will play. So, you know, suddenly you look at it, you know, and these next two league games against Fulham and Palace, and those are those kind of games we just talked about where they drop points. In fact, they drop points against both of them in the last 3 months, 4 months.
Yeah.
If they can get 6 points from those two games, suddenly they'll be back in that conversation, won't they, properly?
Yeah.
And Bale is just totally, those performances, I think, in the last couple of games have totally transformed what the season can be.
He really has. And he's also, I was trying to think earlier, when was the last time, because I don't really watch a lot of Spanish football, but I was wondering when the last time he kind of looked himself was. Like, I saw that he scored two goals in a La Liga game against Villarreal in September 2019, just after his move to Jiangsu Suning collapsed in the summer of 2019. But I wonder if that might even have been his best performance since the overhead kick in the 2018 Champions League final in Kiev against Liverpool, which was coming up to 3 years ago. Like, he scored a hat-trick against Kashima Antlers in the Club World Cup in December 2018. James looks impressed by that fact. Watching him yesterday, he played with a confidence and a sharpness that I just didn't think he still had in him. So in that sense, he's already done better than I thought he would have done, say, a month ago, when he just couldn't really get in the team and he never looked anywhere near his level. On the kind of broader tactical point, I think in this game we saw the benefit of the move of Ndombele back into the two, which has really been the big change in the last month. I guess ever since the West Brom game, which they won 2-0 at home, was when Mourinho first moved Ndombele back into the two rather than having him play as the 10. And obviously the beauty of doing that is you have four attacking players in front of Ndombele. And obviously in the last few weeks they've been slightly constrained by having Eric Lamela as one of those front four, who is, you know, he's very good at certain things, Lamela, but he's not like an out-and-out attacking player. But this time, because it was Son, Kane, Lucas and Bale as the front four, it was the first time they had really four pure forwards. I think that, combined with having the two attacking fullbacks as well in Reguilon and Aurier, it was just a much more attacking-looking Tottenham team, even aside from individuals.
Yeah, I thought it was quite a bold select. I mean, I think you tweeted this. It was quite a bold selection, wasn't it? A team selection. If you think about like being
the most attacking, I think it was the most attacking team Mourinho's put out at Tottenham.
Yeah, you'd say it probably was. And like, you know, against a team like Burnley, who, as we've established, are no mugs, it's pretty ballsy to do that. I thought it was quite interesting that there were times, and actually the attack that led to that fourth goal, where Lucas was basically playing as close to a number nine as Spurs had. You know, obviously now we're expecting Kane to drop off, but it's quite interesting to see Lucas playing centrally ahead of him.
Yeah.
Having bemoaned him playing as a number nine this time last year, for him to now be playing as the central focal point with so much going on around him, it feels quite different though, doesn't it?
I think that's the thing. I think he's quite, what Lucas is good at is just, this is going to sound incredibly basic, just getting the ball and running forward with it. He's willing to make runs that other players wouldn't do because other players would think, God, if I run there, I'm going to lose the ball. Whereas Lucas is quite willing just to, you know, drive forward with the ball, try and provoke a challenge. A lot of the times he'll lose it. Some of the times he'll win a free kick. There was one moment early in the first half, I think at 1-0, where I think he got the ball in from Son and he burst forward. A brilliant first touch through a defender. And then he hit a shot straight at Pope. And it was just like, and obviously, you know, he didn't score. He could have scored. But the fact he could make that chance for himself by taking the risk and running and bursting forward with the ball with that touch was testament to what he can do in that system. And, you know, he's I don't think he's as good as the other three guys around him, but it's not like he gives you nothing.
it then made me think about how we assess him based on European games, because he tries to make those runs in games against lesser teams where, one, there are so many defenders deep anyway, and two, the other players in the Tottenham team, and this isn't to decry those players, but if it's Vinicius, Lamella, Bergwijn, say, up there with him, opposition defenders aren't going to be quite so preoccupied by them as they would be by Kane, Son, Bale. So he probably has maybe slightly less to do against Premier League defences because, you know, if Kane's dropped off, at least one defender's going to kind of have an eye on him. If Son's peeled off to the left and Bale's peeled off to the right, then they're going to take at least two defenders with the two of them as well. So it kind of stands to reason that there'd be a little bit more space for Lucas to operate in a Premier League game than maybe there would be in a European game. And that did make me think a bit about how we kind of look, not just at Lucas, but other players who play in these European matches and maybe haven't done so well, that it's not really fair to kind of judge them, even if they're playing against lesser teams, if they're playing with slightly lesser players. It's not quite an even playing field, is it?
Yeah, you're right. But it did make me think, like, because a lot of people, I think if you asked how you could change the team that played the other day, they would say, well, you'd have either Dele or Lo Celso in instead of Lucas. Maybe it's a slightly more conventional number 10 than Lucas's sort of own interpretation of that role. Do you agree with that, James? Would you go for Dele? Would you go for Lo Celso? Would you stick with Lucas?
It feels a bit unfair to kind of say you'd pick someone else on the basis of what we saw yesterday. I mean, I think ultimately I would want Dele to be in the team. And you can see how he could operate as the kind of the main focal point in a different way.
Yeah.
But still as like a midfield player going beyond Harry Kane when Harry Kane drops off. You know, and Dele Alli will make runs into the box and be more of a threat from crosses, I guess. And we know that particularly Reguilón, but also Aurier as well, their delivery into the penalty area is pretty good. Sort of very good, actually. So you could see the merit of Dele being the player in that system, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. The role that Lucas plays in that system now is probably a role that, you know, it's a role that we've seen Dele Alli play for years, like running beyond Kane, getting beyond Kane into the box, getting on the end of things, particularly in a team which had two attacking fullbacks and Son and Bale coming in from outside. Like, there's going to be a lot of chances there. Going to be quite a lot of mayhem, I think. And you can totally see Dele making the most of that. I still think it's a bit of a shame we've barely seen Lo Celso all season. He seems to have got, you know, a few different injuries at bad times and never really been able to get a run of games together. But I still think he's such a good player that ultimately, not all the time, but a lot of the time, Spurs' best team will have a fit Lo Celso in. And I suppose maybe if it's an away game or a European game where they wanted a bit of extra control, I would want Lo Celso as the 10 in that system, playing in front of Højbjerg and Ndombele, even though he would obviously give you much less in the final third than Lucas and Dele would, who are much better final third players, I think.
I mean, I think aside from anything else, you just want the options, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's inarguable that Spurs would have been better off had he been fit all season, purely because it sort of allowed them to rotate that a little bit more and keep players a little bit fresher. So for me, I mean, I take on board what you're saying, but for me, it's quite hard to see exactly where and when he's going to fit in.
Yeah.
Now, I'd be interested to see when it comes around to, like, say, the League Cup final, whether Mourinho is going to go back to the sort of tried and tested Højbjerg and Sissoko in the two and Ndombele further forward, or whether now he's going to kind of migrate to something a bit more akin to the kind of team we saw yesterday. My instinct is it would be better to go for the Sissoko Højbjerg dynamic, but I'm not convinced that's what we'll see, given it isn't really what he did in the most recent game against City.
That is a huge question. If Spurs keep on with this sort of 4-2-4, which I think is basically what it is, if Spurs keep on with this 4-2-4 for the next few weeks, how are they set up against City? I think it's fascinating. I did think there were moments where Burnley kind of looked like getting through, or seem to kind of almost have Spurs turned or almost getting behind, because it's a lot, you know, you're asking a lot defensively for Højbjerg and Ndombele to do all the defending. And of course, against Burnley is one thing, because Burnley are like stylistically as different from City as you can get. But if it's City with De Bruyne, Bernardo, Foden all drifting into that space and no recognised centre forward, which is how City have been playing recently, then I would worry a little bit for that kind of area in and around Højbjerg if Tottenham were to play like that. It is it's a question that Mourinho will be relishing. So something else that I quite enjoyed on the coverage of this game yesterday on Sky Sports was quite a funny row between Roy Keane and Jamie Redknapp, which I'm sure a lot of you will have heard, but here's a clip from it now.
Which out of this Tottenham team would get in Liverpool, Man City team, Chelsea team? You wouldn't touch any of them.
Son and Kane, what,
Hoiberg? Yeah, I'd take them two. Yeah, I'd take them two. Outstanding, but the rest of them, you wouldn't touch them.
Play Alderweireld was a better centre-back. He'd get in Man United's team as a centre-back right now. I think he would. Yeah. I think the goalkeeper's not good enough. I'll agree with you there. I don't think he does well enough. I think the two right-backs they've signed. No, I don't trust Aurier and I don't trust Doherty. He hasn't done well enough, but he plays in a back three. I think the back four isn't good enough. But I'll tell you what, Reguilón is as good a left-back as there is in the country. Yeah. So I think you've got that one wrong. I think he's a class player.
That's why Real Madrid let him go.
Not got any
that's
confidence.
Why, why do you think Real Madrid let him go?
So you're saying he's not... Does that matter? Oh, because Real Madrid let him go. That doesn't make him a good player.
Yeah, it's but how much did they let him go for?
Country, not a good player,
how much did they let him go for? It sounds like they paid 60, 70 million.
They might be able to buy him back, actually.
Bring, so you're saying... They bring Doherty in. He's a fantastic left-back.
Doherty's playing for Wolves, who are the last year have done well and they're expecting to compete. They're selling to Spurs for 15 million Doherty. Does anyone really think Doherty's going to make Spurs a top four team?
No,
Doherty, really?
Yeah, I agree with you. What about the left back then? So you're saying Reguilón's not a good player now? Is that what you're saying?
No, he's a good player.
You can't have seen a lot of Spurs.
He is a good player. No, he's a good player.
Just take a breath, Jamie.
Very good.
Now, I never thought I'd say this on the podcast, but I completely agree with Jamie Redknapp here, James. I am very much in the pro Jamie Redknapp camp because I think he's right that this is quite a good squad. Like, this is something we've been talked about all season, really, in the context of the Mourinho debate. Is are these players good or not? And I think there is a view that Mourinho is off the hook no matter how bad things get because the players are bad. But my view of this is that the players are pretty good. I think Keane has a point that being an international player doesn't in itself make you good. And also that the Spurs squad isn't as good as it was a few years ago. Although I think there's various other factors for that, not just individuals. But fundamentally, the players are not bad.
There is definitely the nucleus of a very good squad there. And there are a lot of good players. You know, you can argue the toss over why it hasn't worked quite as well as you would have expected it to either at the start of the season or once we got to sort of November, December. But I don't think you can argue that. I mean, look, Lloris is clearly in decline, but he's obviously one of the better goalkeepers in the Premier League still. Similar for someone like Alderweireld, who's not as good as he was 3 or 4 years ago, but that doesn't mean he's not still a very good player. Aurier has, broadly speaking, been improved this season. Reguilón, we know, it looks like he's going to be one of the better fullbacks in the division. Hoiberg clearly made a massive impact. Ndombele, Lo Celso, Dele Alli, theoretically, should be one of the better players in the league. Kane and so on goes about saying Bale, it looks like he's going to be back at it as well. So there are loads of good players there.
And Keane's argument seems to be that nobody outside Kane and Son would get in the rest of the other big six teams, which seems bizarre. One thing that struck me about the whole thing is that nobody mentioned Ndombele by name, who I think is a player who could... Before Spurs fans accuse me of trying to sell these players to other teams, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that Ndombele would be good enough, technically-wise, to play for City or Man United or Liverpool or Leicester or anyone. It's not like Man United have got lots of really good players in lots of positions. And Redknapp made that point to Keane. He said, look, United tried to sign Alderweireld. They also tried to sign Dier the year before.
Yeah, exactly.
Which kind of ties us back to the issue about the Spurs defence. But I think a lot of these individuals, you might argue that in midfield and in defence, Spurs were better 3 or 4 years ago. I think that probably is true, just. But the individuals in the Spurs squad are not unusably bad.
Yeah, you're right. And it does tie into that kind of Mourinho debate again, I guess, of whether you kind of side with him or the players in terms of like that regression.
But it has got me thinking, and this was prompted by a tweet I got this morning, are we being a bit fickle? Because I do feel at the moment like Spurs' season, it's on a knife edge at the moment, Spurs' season. They can't afford to lose any more ground in the Premier League. They can't afford to get knocked out of the Europa League by Dinamo Zagreb. They have to maintain this improvement that they've shown in the last week or so and continue it right up until, you know, through the rest of March, up until the international break, which is a hugely important time. And then obviously April will be even more important than that. So I do feel like right now everything is in the mix. We published a story last week after our last podcast saying that while Mourinho thought that his coaching methods were second to none, which is what he said after the West Ham game, that some of the Tottenham players don't like them, that they think that they're limited in their attacking football, that it's too reactive. very much connected to some of the criticisms that we've made over this season of how the team play. And I do think that those criticisms are legitimate, and I certainly, as I said in my piece, I certainly think that there are Spurs players who are not on board fully with Mourinho's approach. That said, the Burnley game showed that it can work. Like, I don't think things are terminal. I think there is still support from some of the players for Mourinho and his style of play. And they're clearly capable of playing well and winning games. So right now, I do feel like everything is on a knife edge, James. It could go either way. Like, there are, as we've been saying for a while on this podcast, there's a very good end of the season that I can envisage, with Spurs winning the Europa League, the League Cup, back in the Champions League for next year. And there's a pretty miserable end of the season that I can envisage as well, which is Spurs tailing off and finishing 8th or 7th and not winning anything. And I don't know which way it's going to go. How are you feeling?
As I kind of mentioned before, I think these next two games are really important because I can't see, in league terms, I can't really see like a good end to the season without getting 6 points in these next two games. And what a good end to the season is, I'm not quite sure now, because I want, like, you know, if they were to win the League Cup and or the Europa League, then obviously like finishing sixth in combination with that, I think would be really, really good. But if they were to lose that League Cup final and go out of Europe, say, in the quarterfinals of the Europa League, or even earlier, I think they really would need, you know, finishing sixth in combination with that would be a failure, and they probably need to find a way of getting into the top four, which, as we mentioned before, suddenly doesn't feel quite such an insurmountable challenge now. But I think if they don't beat Fulham and Palace, then that gap will open up a little bit. I mean, I think Chelsea's next two games are... There's Chelsea-Liverpool coming up. There's another sort of Chelsea game against someone else in that mix. So I can't think who it can be now. Everton, maybe? I don't know. It all seems like a lot of these teams are all kind of playing each other. The teams kind of in between Spurs and like third or fourth. So teams will definitely drop points. And it is as good as an opportunity as they're going to get over the next few days or next week to really close that gap down and put themselves right back in that mix again. And if I haven't done that by the time they're playing Arsenal in like 2 weeks' time, I think it could be that could be done and dusted. Which, you know, in one sense, maybe it's quite good because it would allow them to kind of focus fully on Europe. And if they go through against Zagreb and they're out of it in the league, then they can just put all their eggs in one basket, can't they? And focus entirely on that, which isn't necessarily a dreadful thing. It obviously isn't what we would have envisaged at the start of the season or November, December. But it would kind of focus minds, certainly. It is incredibly difficult to work out what the season is going to be. And I'm very conscious that people will be thinking that we flip-flopped over the course of the last few months. But it has just been one of those seasons where, you know, we kind of had a vision of it being quite a difficult challenge for Spurs to get in the top four right at the start. Obviously, we lost in the first game and looked absolutely terrible and we were concerned, then picked up incredibly quickly and had those two big wins against Southampton and Manchester United. Had a bit of a wobble against West Ham, but then went on a very good run and beat Man City, Arsenal drew at Chelsea, played well at Liverpool but lost. But then suddenly it kind of feels like the wheels came off so spectacularly over the course of the following two or three months that it was just impossible to conceive that they would be able to turn it around in a way that would be big enough to get back into the top four, which is mad when you think that. You know, I remember us having conversations about top four being more or less nailed on.
Yeah,
I'm sure, and
yeah.
You and or Charlie saying it, which isn't just me throwing you under the bus, but you were.
I'm sure, yeah.
It has just been a ludicrous season in that sense, in terms of like looking like they were going to perform way over expectations, and then suddenly ending up now, like looking like they could be way below, and now suddenly we've had this kind of kickback in the last few days where it feels like, well, actually maybe things aren't quite that bad. So. I'm conscious that it kind of feels like we've been swinging one way then the other and just kind of going with whichever way the wind is blowing. But it really has been that kind of season where it's just been very, very difficult to gauge which way things are going to go. And I wouldn't be surprised if things kind of swung two more times between now and the end.
Yeah. I think I'm probably willing to hold my hands up to the accusations of fickleness. I think I probably am quite fickle.
Because I'm here as the fan, so I'm allowed to be fickle. That's the point.
Yeah.
You're a journalist, like a proper grown-up journalist. You go to press conferences and matches and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So you should be disappointed to be accused of being fickle.
I think to an extent, like, being a journalist does involve responding a bit to what fans want, and you know, both prompting and also reflecting what fans want. So there's going to be a degree of reactiveness, and it kind of surprises me when people say typical reactive, reactionary, knee-jerk journalism, and you think, well, you know, the team did just win 4-0. And so to an extent, you're you are going to follow the results a bit, while at the same time, you know, you might draw conclusions that are run slightly counter to that.
What I would say as well in regards to that is that, you know, there was a defeat at Anfield where I think some people in the media were really, really hammering Spurs for the way they played, when I think actually we on our podcast after that were quite positive about the way Spurs had played, and were kind of fairly defensive of a team. Ironic, given the accusations they had been too defensive. And then, you know, the games like West Brom the other week where they won for the first time in a while, but we were kind of quite guarded in terms of kind of praising too much, because it, you know, that really was only West Brom, and it wasn't like an absolutely scintillating performance. But it's, you know, this one against Burnley feels incredibly different against a far more obdurate opponent, and a far better performance from Spurs. So yeah, I would certainly add that as a caveat, that I think we have kind of not flip-flopped purely on the basis of results.
Yeah.
Been more kind of performance-led.
I hope so. But we do take on board the constructive criticisms of the readers, whether it's in tweets or in the comments or whatever. So please do keep them coming. We will try and bear in mind what you think, if you think we're being unfair or too happy clappy.
Yeah,
we'll flip flop again. Yeah, basically, if you shout at us enough, we'll change our minds.
Just please tell
so
us.
So please continue to shout at us, and we will change our mind back to whatever your opinion is. But yeah, it really is the bigger. Yeah, I mean, I know we keep saying it. It's just a colossal few weeks, isn't it? Between now and the international break, like after the international break, Spurs can worry about down the line. And actually, they've got some bigger games then in the league, in the sense that they've got Man United, they've got Everton, they've got City in the Carabao Cup final. But it's so perfect that it's Fulham and Palace, because Fulham and Palace were two of the most depressing, frustrating, exasperating one-all draws of those one-all draws that Spurs have had, just because you could kind of tell what was going to happen before it happened, and then it did happen. If they can win both of those games, they can prove that this kind of 1-0-itis that they've got is off their backs, then, you know, suddenly I do think the prospects will be changing. And I do think, as James just said there, like, predicting who will actually wind up finishing fourth is quite hard at the moment, just because of the unique circumstances this season. Like, I'm sure, imagine City and United will be first and second, but I wouldn't necessarily trust Leicester and West Ham to stick in third and fourth. And while Chelsea and Liverpool might go on a run and get back in there, they might not. And then you've got Everton and Villa around Spurs, who, you know, I don't know whether they've got the staying power, the experience to dig in and make a push for fourth. I'm, you know, this is not me saying Spurs are going to get a fourth. I just do think there will be a lot of churn and movement around that, from second place down, basically, second place to 10th, over the last 12 games of the season. And that might see Spurs finish in fourth, or it might see the Spurs finish in 9th. But it's quite difficult to call that at this point. But there's going to be a future beyond this season. You know, Tottenham will still be there next season. So I did a piece the other day looking at some of the players who might be involved for them next year who are not currently playing for the club, and that is the guys who are out on loan. So it's a bit of a change, really, for Spurs, in the sense that under Pochettino, he famously didn't like to loan out his best young players, liked to keep them at the club and work with them and coach them. And I think in the main, that was a pretty successful policy. Like, that was how, you know, Harry Winks wouldn't be the player that he is now if it wasn't for that Pochettino coaching. And it had a lot of success, whereas Mourinho is a bit more old school in the sense that he wants his best young players to go out and get loan experience rather than just hanging around at the club. And that means that now, in a way that wasn't the case in the past few years, Spurs' best young players are out on loan. So I did a story looking at how well those guys are doing. Like, the big, you know, I think the big name really is Oliver Skipp, who is doing really, really well for Daniel Farke's Norwich in a kind of deep-lying midfield role. He scored a rare goal the other day, kind of running the length of the pitch to finish off a counter-attack. So he looks like he's doing really well, James.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be quite interesting to see how big an impact which European competition, if any, Spurs are playing in next season has on what happens if guys like Skipp. Because If they're in Europa League again, then you can kind of see that that might be quite a good pathway for people like Skip in terms of like getting regular matches in that next season. Whereas if they're not in Europe at all, then maybe it's more beneficial in the longer term for him to go out on loan again, maybe. I mean, even to Norwich again, possibly in the Premier League next season. You can kind of see where that might work slightly better rather than him being mostly sat on the bench. And I know there were kind of internal conversations, I think you mentioned this, about whether Skip should come back in January. And we know, we've said before, Mourinho was kind of sort of semi-reluctant to let him go out at all originally. So, you know, obviously people at the club, including Mourinho, rate him highly. But I just wonder whether it's highly enough for him to play regularly in the Premier League even next season, despite how well he's done this season. And I think, you know, most likely he'd be kind of like an understudy for Højbjerg, maybe.
Yeah.
And I just think that it might, one, having someone like that that could play some games, you know, because we know how much Højbjerg has had to play this season, and how terrified Mourinho has been of ever withdrawing him, and how often he's kind of throwing him on when he's previously wanted to give him a rest, like in European games or cup games or whatever. So yeah, obviously it'd be massive to have a player like that in the squad, but I do think if they're not in Europe, it might be more sensible in the longer term to have him out on loan. I mean, the other one who I think could come into the fold, it would be Sessegnon, I guess, Ryan Sessegnon.
Yeah.
We think, we know Spurs are probably going to need to improve defensively next season. That's where they're going to probably want to spend most of their transfer budget, if such a thing exists, over the summer. So if they can kind of, without wanting to kind of downplay the players too much, if they can kind of pad out the rest of the squad with players like Skip and Sessegnon without having to kind of spend more money on backup midfield players or wide players or whatever, you can kind of see that that might be in their thinking.
Yeah, yeah. And the other big one who I think there's a lot of interest in is Troy Parrott. So Parrott obviously went to Millwall at the start of the season and I think struggled a bit to really get in and make his presence felt there. You know, because he hasn't got really any experience of senior football, Parrott, just a few games for Spurs here and there. And then playing in the Championship, I think he found it very tough and struggled to really make an impact for Gary Rowett. So that loan was cancelled and he went to Ipswich, where, you know, down in League One, where it's a little bit easier, you get a bit more time on the ball. And but he's been doing well. He's been, you know, speaking to people who watch a lot of Ipswich and watch a lot of Parrott, and they've been really impressed with him. He's been playing in a kind of sort of deep-lying striker role behind Norwood, I think, up front for... Is it Norwood? Up front for Ipswich. And yeah, people seem impressed with him. James Norwood, yeah. And he the one thing is he hasn't scored yet. He's had a good, really good... I think he started 6 games in a row, which is his best ever run of games by far. He hasn't got a goal yet. I think, you know, he certainly needs a goal for his confidence. And I don't get the impression... I think while Skip next year will be either probably on a Premier League loan or in and around the Tottenham squad, I feel like Parrott, you know, given that he's in League One at the moment, Parrott is probably behind Skip in that development process. And maybe it'll be another year before we see Parrott competing in the Tottenham squad. But yeah, I think he is now very much on the right track. And there's Harvey White-James as well, who is at Portsmouth in League One, scored his first goal in a 1-0 win at Oxford United last Tuesday. I think he is expected to be in and around the Spurs squad next season. He's still very, very popular with the club. So is there anyone else, James, as well as Parrott or White, or who you'd like to see more of next year?
You think like Parrott and White, maybe they're that little bit younger and obviously they've got a little bit less kind of experience. Obviously Skip and Sessegnon have both played Premier League matches and European matches, I guess, before. So yeah, White and Parrott maybe would be slightly further down the line, I guess. I mean, the one obviously that started the whole conversation was Dane Scarlett, wasn't it? After Mourinho said he'd be in the first team squad next season, which is quite some statement given he's still 16, right? He'll be 17 next season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, who knows exactly how that's going to play out. I mean, that's probably too young to go out on loan, I guess, isn't it? You really want to keep someone quite that young around the club and let him kind of play in under-18s, under-23 matches and whatever. So, yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how, you know, guys like Scarlett and Devine do as well, obviously having seen them both play in the first team. So it feels like there was a bit of a, I don't want to say like a fallow period because that kind of seems quite disrespectful, but, you know, having seen quite a kind of peak kind of 4 or 5 years ago of a lot of academy players coming into the first team when Pochettino first took over. Sorry, I suppose 6 or 7 years ago now. You know, if Kane and Mason, Benteleb, Townsend, it kind of felt like that slowed down a little bit. And I don't know whether that is down to that policy you were talking about of players not going out on loan. But yeah, now it feels like there's quite a lot of excitement about quite a few players, which obviously is quite good to see, particularly because, you know, as we said, I'd be surprised if there was loads of money to be spent on new signings next season. So if they can utilise those youth team players next season, that would definitely be good.
Excellent. Yeah, well, it's interesting to think about how what Spurs will look like next season. You know, we can't even honestly say what the squad will look like or the manager or the, you know, how many people there will be in the stadiums. But I think I think there are certainly reasons to be optimistic, as well as an awful lot of football left to be played this season and lots of different scenarios left on the table. Well, that's all we've got time for on this week's podcast. We will be back again next week, looking back at the Fulham game this Thursday and the Crystal Palace game on Sunday. Thanks very much to everyone for all your feedback, tweets, comments and everything. We do take them all on board. Thank you very much to James and producer Tom, and we look forward to being back with you again next week.
The Athletic.